As nonviolent and violent protests have been going on in the state and around the country, members of the media have been trying to cover the rapidly evolving events. And some journalism experts say the way that the media frames the protest story can do a lot to shape public opinion. Some elected officials and others are making the same case. Here's Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway speaking Sunday after a night in the city that included standoffs with law enforcement, vandalism, looting, fires, and tear gas.
I want to thank Freedom Inc. and Urban Triage for organizing a successful, justified, and peaceful protest yesterday. And I want to make sure that everyone in the media and everyone in our community understands that this was not a case of a protest turning violent. This was a case of a protest successfully concluding peacefully, and then a relatively small group of people coming in to cause violence and property damage.
Mike Wagner is a UW-Madison professor of journalism and mass communication. Mike, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, a lot of times I think the easy headline is protest turns violent or protest leads to violence, things like that. From what you heard from the Madison mayor there, can you talk about how the media can talk about both stories without necessarily implying they're necessarily the same story?
Yeah, it's a complicated thing to do because usually reporters are trying to tell a story about one thing, and here as the mayor pointed out, there was more than one thing to talk about. There was a peaceful protest that was planned. It started. It ended. There was no destruction of property or anything like that. There was just a protest over an issue that is causing protests all around the country and indeed the globe. And then later, there were people who engaged in destruction of property and some violence as well. And so making sure that reporters can accurately reflect what's happening is really important when it comes to how people view the legitimacy of protests. Typically, news media kind of focus on what we think of as a protest paradigm, emphasizing drama, disruption, demands of grievances, and violence. And they kind of spend less time talking about what specific reasons people are protesting for in the first place.
How can people in the media try to sort all that out? It is not a very easy story to tell, given that, with 100 people, say, at a rally, there might be 100 different motivations for why they're there.
That's right. And, it's hard to cover an event in real time because the reporter's vantage point is limited to what they see when they may not see the whole thing. And I think we've seen that in the live television coverage that's been happening in Madison over the last few days, where some reporters are close to, say, a burning dumpster or a burning squad car, and other reporters are around folks who are generally quiet and, maybe articulating some grievances, but, not doing so with any destruction of property. And so it's difficult to tell these stories. And I think one thing that journalists can do is try to interview as many people who are a part of the protest as possible, especially when it comes to protests related to race. Research has shown that protesters get the least amount of quotes in stories that are about racially motivated protests or protests related to racial discrimination or inequity, whereas protesters for other issues get lots more attention. Usually it's public officials and police and chief executives like mayors or governors that get quoted in protests about race and not the people who are doing the protesting.
You had shared something, research on Twitter, an essay by a colleague of yours talking about how initial media reports can shape the public perception of a protest. How important do you think that is?
I think it's really important. If the focus of the coverage is on what the grievances are of the protesters and what caused those grievances, people are more likely to take those seriously than if the coverage is on disruptive behavior, the police use of violence, the threat of violence, video of militarized, Humvees rolling in and riot gear from police. So depending upon whether the focus of the coverage is on the spectacle, the potential for violence, or what the grievances are of the protesters goes a long way to shaping how people think about the protest in the first place and how they think about the issues that people are protesting about in the first place.
We're talking about media coverage of this weekend's protests. Mike Wagner is with us, UW-Madison professor of journalism and mass communication. Let's talk a little bit about putting things in context, Mike. I mean, a daily news report is usually trying to give you the who, what, when, where, why. And that why can be a little difficult. If you start digging in, you might want to go back 2 years or 200 years. How much can we successfully convey as we're trying to also recap what just happened?
That's another big challenge of reporting a live protest event, is that there is the new thing that's happening now, which is a protest. It's a mass gathering of people making some kind of demand or expressing dissatisfaction with something that's happening. And then there's the, you know, set of contextual reporting that journalists can engage in to tell us why this is occurring. Journalists can talk to experts about why that's happening. They can talk to the organizers of the protests, if the protest has organizers, and they can talk to the people doing the protesting to help try to understand what the motivations are. And in some cases, they'll learn that there are as many motivations for the protest as there are people out protesting. And in others, they'll learn that there's a fairly unified message about why people are out there and what it is they would like to see happen. And that's complicated. And it's a moving target. It's not something I think that a journalist can expect to get exactly right in just one story, but it's more of how the work progresses over a series of stories about that particular protest or set of protests that they're trying to cover.
An additional challenge here, Mike, is that this is coming in a time where we've seen years of cutbacks and layoffs in newsrooms. You know, a big company might buy out a newspaper and cut back staff. And now on top of that, furloughs related to financial difficulties from COVID-19. These are news units, in many cases anyway, at the local level that are stretched thin, if they're there at all.
That's absolutely true. And that causes a few problems, right? One problem is that a lot of the institutional memory of a news organization gets gutted when people are furloughed or take voluntary buyouts and things like that. And this is when you see the hiring then of someone much newer and cheaper and not from here, with the experience of having lived, you know, here, if we're talking about the protests in Madison, for example, as a way to help build trust with the audience. And so I noticed last night, I was kind of flipping between a lot of the major television stations in town, and one of the new reporters noted that they were next to Ian's Pizza, right, instead of Ian's, right? So it's just those kinds of things where you haven't lived here, and so you don't know exactly, you know, what businesses are called, who the key players are on major issues, what the history is on any particular issue, especially one that sparks a protest. And it makes it harder to build trust with the audience. And a lot of that comes from what we see when newsrooms are forced to shrink because of the budgetary environment that news organizations find them in. And so it makes it harder to report accurately. It makes it harder to build trust with the audience, which then, you know, makes it harder for them to, the news organizations, to make the money they need to make to have a more robust set of reporters out there doing their work.
Another difficulty, we've seen journalists attacked in some cases by protesters, in some cases by police, or even, as in this example, arrested. CNN's Omar Jimenez was actually arrested live on the air while his four-person production team was trying to report on street closures in Minneapolis. Here's a listen to some of that scene.
I'm sorry?
You're under arrest.
Okay. Do you mind telling me why I'm under arrest, sir?
Why am I under arrest, sir?
Officers with CNN, and he's on the air right now.
Okay.
You are arresting him live on CNN. We told you before that we are with CNN.
If you're just tuning in, you are watching our correspondent, Omar Jimenez, being arrested by state police in Minnesota. We're not sure why our correspondent is being arrested.
So, Mike, how reporters, correspondents have been treated over the course of their coverage of this protest?
As is often the case during protests like these, especially ones related to anti-Black racism, reporters are getting arrested or shot at. So Omar Jimenez of CNN, as you noted, was arrested. Other reporters have been arrested. Caitlin Rust in Louisville got shot at live on the air with pepper balls. And then when the camera operator that she was working with was saying to police that they were news media, one of their police officers turned their gun on the camera operator and started shooting at them. And so this is not new. Nearly a dozen reporters, at least, were arrested during the Ferguson protests a few years ago in Missouri. This happens regularly and is a way to prevent news organizations from engaging in their First Amendment right and their civic obligation to report to the public on what is happening in events like these.
We're talking to UW-Madison Professor of Journalism and Mass Communication Mike Wagner about media coverage of this weekend's protest, violence and destruction, and peaceful rallies as well, associated with the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis a week ago. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have you been following reporting on these protests when something like this is going on? What do you want from the media, whether it's print or broadcast or online? What bugs you about the way these things are covered? If you've been on hand at a scene, what have you seen from the coverage? Did it match up with the reality you saw? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with UW-Madison journalism professor Mike Wagner about what the media might be getting right and wrong in the way it covers protests and demonstrations following the death of George Floyd. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What different news sources are you turning to for coverage of the protests and demonstrations? What similarities, what differences are you seeing? What do you want to see from the media as they cover an event like this? What do you worry that might be missed in the stories we tell? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Mike, before we go to our callers, I want to get your thoughts on how the media can deal with rumors. In this case, we have, as with any protest, rumors, the left Antifa or anarchist groups are participating in hijacking, others pointing toward right-wing infiltrators. We've heard this from people at various levels of government, too. And, of course, with the internet, these rumors fly around really quickly. How can the media try to tackle that in a way, given that a lot of sides have a stake in their rumors being right, I guess?
Right. I think the most important thing is transparency. So reporters need to first think carefully about who are the sources for these claims, right? If it's a governor or a mayor, as has been the case in Minneapolis, for example, talking about some claims that people are coming from the outside, reporting those claims, reporting the sources of those claims, and then reporting any relevant context, right? Is there, for example, as there is when we talk about what are often referred to as outside agitators, is there a history of officials reporting or using that as a way to try to discredit the motives of the people doing the protest? Or is it trying to put into context the differences between the peaceful protest, for example, that happened in Minneapolis and then and other places like Madison, and then violent or property destruction outbursts in most cases that took place after the protests, especially the one in Madison, now had ended? And so transparency of sources is the most important thing. Not reporting rumors where a trusted source is not involved is another. And when beating down rumors, the research shows the best thing to do is report what's true rather than say this thing is not true. People tend to have a harder time remembering where they learn stuff and have a, because they're consuming media while doing other things, right? They're driving their car, they're, you know, wrangling their kids, they're cooking dinner, and so it's more effective for reporters to say these are the things that are true, rather than say a bunch of things that are false and then say, oh, and those were debunked. It's just harder for people to get that stuff right when they're trying to remember what they learned from the news.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, interesting topic. I feel and I believe that this is a time for journalism to take a step back. We have had fake news in our country, and I believe that journalists are too close to the action. And I think they want to be because they're trying to get the story. But I think they're putting themselves in harm's way unnecessarily. And I question the judgment of the bosses of these companies telling these young people, these young journalists, to get between yourself and the police and the demonstrators and try to see both. When the police are trying to take control of the situation, I have a respect for authority. When the police are in a situation, I respect their authority. I keep my distance. I've been racially profiled as a white person in the south side of Chicago in a black community. I know how it feels to be singled out because of your race. Learn to
Jeff,
keep my
distance. Thanks for the call. Jeff saying journalists are putting themselves at risk unnecessarily by getting too close to the action.
Journalism is a risky job. Many journalists get killed every year doing their work. Journalists, as we've seen in the last couple of days, get shot at, get arrested, and worse. And so journalists tend to know that it's a risky job. And many, if not most, journalists prefer to chase the story and certainly tend to blanch or object when they're told by officials that they need to get out of the way. Journalists are there to document what's happening, and they're there to show us whether the people that we pay with our tax dollars are doing their jobs in ways that we want them done. And if journalists aren't there, then they can't do that documentation for us. The Constitution enshrines a right for journalists to be able to engage in coverage without the government preventing them from doing so. And it is a risk. There's no doubt about that. But as we see when, for example, the arrest of CNN's Omar Jimenez, he was more than willing to go where the police wanted him to go. He kept asking them, where would you like me to be? We'll go there. It's not that he wasn't listening to the directions of the police officers. It's that they arrested him anyway. And that's a fundamental difference that Americans should be forced to see and should be forced to reckon with.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. We'll go to Owen in Wyoega now. Owen, hello.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys taking my call. Journalism, let's talk about it for a minute, because I don't agree that something about the pronunciation of a particular restaurant in an area of the city that would be technically important to the local folks is not going to make you a good journalist. Because if you are conveying your message to people that could be visitors to the area or anywhere else, they're not going to know the difference between that pronunciation and the other pronunciation. I believe that journalism needs to focus more on not the big players or the key players in a neighborhood or an area or the right way or the wrong way to say the name of a restaurant. I think they need to focus more on listening to all points of view and not just finding the people who have credentials, such as people who have been published or have some sort of authority in the community as being.
Owen, thanks a lot for the call. You gave us a lot to work with already. The restaurant example, Mike, I think was just an example of the kind of local knowledge a reporter could bring to the table. But let's hit Owen's second point there. He wants to hear more from ordinary people in a story like this, it sounds like.
Well, the research on protests would suggest that that's just what's not happening, especially in protests that are about issues related to race and racism. Usually what we hear from there are people who are elected officials or people who are working with and for some aspect of the government. And we tend not to hear in news coverage from people. And that's one thing I think a lot of media critics and protesters are pushing back at and would prefer the voices of those who are trying to share their grievance with their government and with their community, have them have a chance to be heard.
Thanks a lot for the call, Owen. Mike, let's talk about something you were touching on earlier, how much you want to capture the drama of a situation. Is there something inherently more vivid and eye-catching that's always going to grab media attention about, say, a block of a city that's on fire as opposed to a block of a city that's hosting a peaceful prayer vigil?
Absolutely. The fire is going to be the video almost every time. The kind of spectacle opportunities are just more likely to get covered, and sometimes for good reason, right? It could be that the fire is a public safety risk, mm-hmm. and people need to know about that. But there are other times, if a small trash can is burning some cardboard, and there are other people who are trying to articulate why protesters are there and what protesters would like, it would be probably better for the for democratic deliberation to hear from the protesters rather than see the video. But that's a difficult judgment to make in live news coverage of a protest, which is also the other thing to remember here is that a lot of this stuff is always taking place live and isn't something that's carefully planned and vetted and edited and re-edited. It's happening in real time, which makes it all the more challenging.
And Mike, how does a medium like Twitter, where a lot of journalists, as they're covering, are also sharing events in real time, how does that shake things up?
Well, it shakes things up because it gives us a chance to talk back to the journalists, right? It gives us a chance to, in real time, criticize what they're doing, praise what they're doing, ask them questions, and also to share our own information. And that's where things get really dangerous for reporters, when they see a tweet and then have to decide, do I treat that tweet as news and report it, even though I might not be able to verify it? Or how do I treat a person's tweet if they're taking video or sharing video? A lot of tweets out there that have been shared claiming to be a video of a building on fire or something are from years ago. And others that are being shared are absolutely true representations of what's happening now. And it's really hard to make those judgments in real time to know what things to share and what not. And it just highlights the importance of the editing process and fact checking.
Mike, thanks again for joining us today.
Sure thing.
That's Mike Wagner, professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. We talked to him today about the challenges and opportunities for news media coverage of protests, specifically looking at the events this weekend surrounding the death of George Floyd.